Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
It's 107 in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Hi, it's John Williams. Thanks for tuning in. We're here until 3 o'clock. Lord, have mercy. A little bit of hazy sunshine downtown. Today would be a better day to see an eclipse. Oh, wait, it doesn't work that way.
2 hours later would have been better.
Yeah, I know.
Here in really
Chicago,
cleared up,
Southern Illinois, a lot of towns. Missouri got rained out. What a bummer. Thank goodness Tom Skilly was at a good vantage point. America will always have that now.
That is a true treasure.
I'm going to go from just a recap of the eclipse yesterday very quickly to the Secret Service coverage of the president and how those two are related. I will explain in just a minute. First of all, thanks to the people on our staff who helped us cover it. Steve Grzanich and Patty Vasquez and Dave Schwann all traveled all the way down to Southern Illinois. It's not that long a trip, but it is when you're joined by 300,000 other people making the same trip on kind of the same two highways. My sister Jean called in after the eclipse and gave us her recap. Tracy Weiner, who produced Spike Odell's show here for years, as Tracy Huvelman was on the phone with us as well. Thanks to all of them and those of you who called and kind of gave us your perspective on that. But then the perspective, so the thing gets done at 2, and my sister Jean says, at 2 o'clock, you know, it was 1:19 to about 1:22 or about there where she was. She said, so we're just going to jump right on the highway. I thought, I'm not sure you are. It took her an hour to get on the ramp and onto Route 57. So there she is in Marion, Illinois, on Route 57 in the southern part of the state at about, oh, say, 2 or 2:30. And then about 6 or 7 o'clock last night, she texted me and she said, we're in Effingham. Effingham is nowhere near Chicago. Effingham is south of Champaign. Effingham is still way down there. So I tweeted the following. I said, still bumper to bumper. This was on behalf of my sister, but just notifying the world if they were wondering how their family and friends were doing making the trek back. I wrote, still bumper to bumper on I-57. Eclipse traffic jam slogs on. Thanks a lot, Obama. And I got 21 likes for that. Whoop, whoop, whoop. But Jimmy Greenfield, who I follow, and you should too, his stuff's always very good, tweeted the following. Surprising nobody, Tom Skilling won the solar eclipse.
Wasn't that a great tweet? I saw that last night, too.
Pretty good.
It was
pretty
perfect.
Good. And it was, and I hadn't heard it, and I hadn't seen it. Then Bill and Wendy played part of it today. I'm going to play just a little bit more, pre and during the eclipse. And while I think that our gang did a really good job, thank you, Bill and Wendy, for patting our team on the back, our three reporters that were down there. I think they really did a good job. They made it fun. It's radio. What are you going to do? I think Channel 9 and Skilling did a great job because they got the following right. CNN, for instance, followed the eclipse across the country, almost always looking at the sky. I know that's where the star is of the show, but the people on Earth are the one experiencing it, and you want to see it go from day to night, and then feel the reaction from the people. You can always see a picture of the moon in front of the sun. That's not a big deal, but watching people go through it really was. So here are two clips from Channel 9's coverage, which was the best yesterday. First, it's skillful Tom Skilling as he was ramping up for the eclipse.
From all of us, I mean, we've been told people start sobbing. If for some, it's just a life-changing event. And we may start doing that, too. But I'll get my act together, guys. And I'll be back to you, I promise you. Guys, back to Chicago. Sorry about this.
Tom just couldn't pull it together. He was so excited. He was so emotional. And that the eclipse, they weren't in the path of totality yet. And then with the cameras on Skilling, the people around him, the kids that were in the lake, he was on a lake shore, so you could just kind of see these people, and you sort of had a nice vista. You could see across the water. You could see out under the horizon where it's still day, but suddenly these people are cast in the shadow of night.
Take it away. Take your glasses away. Look up.
Wow.
Look at that. Oh, my word. Wow. This is amazing. What do you think of this, guys? Wow.
You did it.
He's hugging a stranger now. Just hugging a guy.
Where are you going to be in 7 years?
I don't know.
Tom Skilling and company. And you know what's great about all of that? And I don't think this should be lost on us, is that it's a great reminder of how positive a shared experience can be, especially when there's no winners and losers. I remember having a thought very similar to this when I was in my first LGBTQ, the Pride Parade in Chicago. And I know some people aren't on board that issue, right? We argue about rights and things like that. But if you were in the parade, at the parade, watch the Pride Parade, there's nobody holding a trophy. There's nothing going on except a bunch of people all agree that they're going to, some of them wear silly outfits, some of them dance, some of them just march, but a bunch of people are all going to just celebrate for celebration's sake. I always thought the Pride Parade was like that. Not without its issues on the backside, but just generally speaking, what a great thing. Everybody just celebrating. Hey, we're having a good time. We're all sharing this experience. And then, you know, the Stanley Cup doesn't follow. Chris Bryant doesn't make an appearance. It's not like that. It's, you know, it's just everybody being positive and sharing an experience. I guess a lot of parades are like that. Certainly the Cubs parade was. But this eclipse was that way too, because, you know, I was trying to think of who exactly. I guess Bill said it this morning, right, Steve? He said when he was walking after his show to the train and he saw everybody come out of the buildings and looking up. And I think those people, even though they didn't get a good view of it in downtown Chicago, will all remember that sort of shared experience. My election night party is a little bit like that, but
hands across America.
Okay, well, exactly. I mean, you know, some of these things
such
are
such a goofy thing.
I know, totally. But if it's a thing that a whole bunch of people decide to do at the same time, I don't know. There's something wonderful about that, unless somebody gets hurt, or you know, White Sox fans are unhappy, or Clinton supporters are unhappy. But I'm a fan of the shared experience. So then there was Shep Smith, who I think is really one of the stars. And the unappreciated stars of Fox News. This is the guy that will call out conservatives or the president when and where they deserve it. I've always felt that Shepard Smith, okay, he can be a conservative and Republican. What do I care? Members of my family are. That's fine. But at the end of the day, do your job, be fair, be reasonable. And I've always felt that he was a pretty good example of that. But for some reason, he decided that this was either beneath him or the coverage had gone overboard. Well, of course the coverage had gone overboard. Tom Skilling was crying for crying out loud. But it's not like we don't have 52 24-hour-a-day news channels. And if everybody's going to do this dance, I don't see the harm in doing it with them. You know, you can swim against the stream. That's not always a bad thing. But, boy, I didn't expect that Shep Smith was going to be a hater. This is part of Shep Smith's coverage.
I have a total eclipse of the phone. Fascinating. It's amazing. Oh, my God. The moon has gotten in front of this. Okay, well, I don't know. It's interesting looking. The sun looks a little like the moon up there in my wall. If you mention it, you got to sing it. Where the deer and the antelope play. Wow. Would you look at that? It's a total eclipse of the sun.
And you look up at
they know this is all it's going to be, right? Just a moon over a sun. Oh, my goodness. That didn't last long. Yoo-hoo! I want to hear more. No, because now you can look at the thing. It's covered, so you can look at it. Oh, my God. The sun is returning. Jalapeno.
So that was him shouting jalapeno for reasons that aren't clear to me at the end of the path of totality. The picture of the president looking up at the eclipse with no glasses on was a bad move by CNN. shortly after the path of totality crossed wherever the president and first family were. A picture ran on CNN, and it said four images of the president at the eclipse. Four images. So it was four random shots of the president, baron, and first lady, and they were looking at the eclipse. In two of them, the president didn't have glasses on. In one of them, famously now, he's squinting up at the sun, doing exactly what you're not supposed to do.
Don't single out CNN there. I mean, I saw that elsewhere, too.
There's no relevance to that picture. There's no news in that picture. All it does is remind you a lot of people think this guy's stupid, and CNN was happy to aid and abet that. You don't know where the sun was. Maybe it was the period of totality where you could look at it without glasses.
Ah.
Or maybe it wasn't so severe that... Steve, did you look at the sun? I know
yes,
the answer to this.
Yes,
without glasses.
Right.
Everybody looked up without
glasses. Like he did, for a second. Not even a second.
So how long was he looking? You don't know. It was a still photograph.
Oh, I saw a video. It was less than a second.
So really, what's the point of that picture then? What's the point of that picture? There's no value in that. If the Obamas had done that, do you think CNN and the Washington Post would have run that picture? I don't think they would have. Now, maybe knowing the optics of the damn thing, Barack Obama would have been more clever. For all of President Trump's savvy with the media, sometimes he's not very savvy. It's like, don't look at the sun. Don't look at the sun. Make sure your glasses are on. Don't look at the sun. If you look at the sun without your glasses, someone's going to get it. They're going to put a picture of it. Don't do it.
That's exactly what he looked like. He looked like someone who was told not, don't do it. And then you can't help but do it.
Exactly. So they run the picture. Aha! Aha! And the more you look at the picture, the more you think, wow, he was looking at it for hours. No, you don't know anything about that. And by the way, as it turns out, he was able to read a teleprompter last night, so I guess his vision's okay.
I think the more they ridicule or point out the absolute trivial things, the less people will believe the big things. And that's a real risk.
I couldn't agree with you more. If you want the look, media, you're on guard. The president has called you out for being fake and biased. I don't even know what fake means, but I know what biased means. And that picture makes you look biased. Jane, this is John. You're on WGN Radio. How are you, Jane?
Hey, John. I'm good. You too. I just had a quick story, and really it's got two parts. I only gave one to your caller. I worked yesterday at a funeral luncheon for my church. And I said, unless you're from rural Illinois, you may not know what that is. But, you know, a person had died, they had the funeral, and then the family comes back somewhere to have lunch and visit. And they come back to our church. So the church women, we were in the kitchen, we had fixed the lunch, and they're starting to eat. I had the one pair of glasses in the whole church that day. And about a little after one, I went out and looked, and yes, it was starting. So I came back running in. I told the gals, so one at a time, they each went out, and they took a look. And man, was that neat. So we've got this conversation going. Somebody from the funeral luncheon hears us and says, oh, can I use those? So out the door they go. And now here's the whole funeral lunch, one by one, going out to see the eclipse and what was going on with that. I said it was the highlight of the funeral luncheon, no doubt. But I'm also telling my daughter then, who is an attorney in Rockford, and she said, Mom, it just was the funniest thing, brings everybody together. She said she was headed from one courtroom to another. She's out on the sidewalk. I had given her a pair. She's looking up. Oh, wow, is that neat? The gal, the attorney was with her, looked up. That's neat. She said there are two men in a car on the side of the road, and they're kind of looking. Should we be looking? Should we not? She said, here, you want to use my glasses? They used your glasses. She said probably eight people before she got to the next office got to see the eclipse because of that one pair of glasses, which I thought was just a hoot.
It's so wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah, that's the shared experience. Hey, thanks for calling.
For
it's nice of you to join us.
You bet.
Have a good day. Steve, that's what you did with your glasses too, right? You shared them with neighbors.
I had so much fun there. We have two new neighbor kids, and I have not met them, and I walked over, and I think they ran in the house. They were a little afraid. They built their own box, you know, their cereal box. I'm like, no, I got these glasses. And it's like, Mommy?
Hey, kid, want to see my glasses? Hey, Gene, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi. Well, you're way brighter and quicker on things than I am. But if that picture had been taken and he was looking up during totality, wouldn't the light have been darker? It wouldn't have been as dark as carbon, you know, as down by Effingham and Carbondale and all that, wouldn't the light be dimmer around him as the picture was taken, or would they have had close enough flashes that they could have lit up the area immediately around them? I don't know.
D.C. wasn't in the path, right?
Yeah, but I get her point. I mean, it did get darker here if the president was looking at the sun at the period of totality, which they really did. They didn't have that in Washington, D.C. anyway. So now that you mentioned it, under no circumstances, okay, so skip my observation that maybe he was in the safe zone. There was no safe zone, and it was bright on his face. It looked like bright sunlight on his face.
You're right about that, yes, unless it was a flash or something. And maybe they don't use flashes like I think of them. The other thing that the other weirdness I heard reported was that they were out there with their son, Barron, and they were wearing glasses, and he wasn't. And then later I saw a picture of him with glasses on. So
he had glasses.
You know, it's hard to judge.
Ivanka came out, not Ivanka. Melania, though, was standing there with the president when he was glinting in this. You're right. His face was getting oranger by the minute. it looked like he was looking right into the bright sun. But she had sunglasses on. Now, maybe they were special welder sunglasses that looked hip, but they weren't the right kind. But I think that, so you're right. My speculation there was wrong in that. But even still, I think the calling out of the Trumps for that just plays into the Trump supporters' hand.
All I can think of is when Trump was elected, some of us were practically prostrate. We were so upset. And I made some remarks on Facebook, and Facebook friends of mine, who I never imagined would have ever voted for such a person, said, well, treat him with respect. He's the president. And I just came right back with, I'll give him every ounce of respect that you all gave Obama. You know, I mean, you can't blame CNN. I mean, if Obama had done, remember when Michelle got the bad press for having bare shoulders at an event? I mean, every little thing was scrutinized.
Comes with the territory. All right. Well, Gene, thank you for the call, and thank you for joining us. I think you can go from there, though, to another story that I think is getting a lot of coverage today, yesterday particularly, although it was overshadowed, you get it, by the eclipse story, and that is the cost to Secret Service. So the Obamas had third. Boy, this is the world we live in. Even Donald Trump eclipses the eclipse, right? Or is inserted into the story. Nothing can happen. You can't order French fries and it somehow not come around to the president. But in this particular case, there's a lot of attention yesterday and a little bit today still about the cost of the Secret Service detail for the president. The Obamas had 31. President Trump has 41 people on his, or 42 people on his 24-hour list. People that need round-the-clock Secret Service protection. And now Secret Service does not have enough money to pay the overtime for all the agents that they need to cover all of these people. You need to tell me how that's a fair story, too. By the way, the story of the lady at the funeral who is sharing the glasses, everybody got a quick peek, pass it on down. Sort of what you were doing, Steve. It was a nice story of sharing the sunglasses, the eclipse glasses. Reminds me of an anecdote from the book called Unbroken by Laura Hillebrand. Did you read that book, Unbroken by Laura Hillebrand?
You know, I never did.
About Louis Zamperini, the guy that was shot down, survived at sea, survived the Japanese internment camp, went on to become an Olympian. It's just the greatest story. The movie was okay. The book was unbelievable. And she followed his life even after the book was written. They were very close up until the time he passed away. And she still takes a lot of time on her website. I forget where I was reading it, her website or her Facebook page, honoring him and remembering him. It's a very interesting story. And in that book, she talks in one scene, one passage I remember. So you have hundreds of these U.S. soldiers, Navy men, whoever was being interned at this Japanese prison camp. Not interned, but they were being held captive by the Japanese who had got them. And so the Red Cross would send bundles of supplies and relief packages, and they wouldn't give them to them. But somehow or another, a chocolate bar got through. A Hershey bar was in one of these packages. And one of the guys opens it up, and there's a Hershey's chocolate bar in there. What would you do in that situation? I mean, you're starving to death, and nobody's sending Hershey bars to you. You have a Hershey bar. They tell the whole camp, we have a Hershey's chocolate bar. And everybody lined up, and they opened the bar, and one by one, they let them come and lick it one by one, and they lick that thing all the way down. Isn't that remarkable? It's 129 on WGN. And that reminds me of our eclipse coverage. Let's see here. Mark, this is John. What did you want to say? You're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, it was overcast in Aurora where I was, and that was one reason I didn't go outside, but I also didn't want to jumble around with my various devices. I was listening to the coverage on both WGN and KMOX St. Louis, which I was streaming on my smartphone. Now, to give you an idea, KMOX is kind of like a WBBM equivalent in St. Louis, and I felt that they did a very professional job. And so through radio, I was getting a sense of a kind of shared experience. And the one report that everybody held in common in these two areas of totality was the 360-degree sunset, and that made me wish that I was down there.
Yeah.
That 360-degree sunset.
That's the way my sister described it, too. And Tracy and the gang, Dave Schwann said as much as well. I can't even, I've heard that 1,000 times now. I still don't know what that would look like, but I'd love to see that. You're right. That must have been something, huh?
Schwanny and Patty and Steve were all fun to listen to.
That's nice of you to call and say that. I got to go, but thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Have a good day. It's 1:30. Steve's going to do the news. And then from there to the coverage of the president's expenses for Secret Service. Also, there was just one other quick note I'll get to now and we'll talk about later, but that is, Steve, as we've been talking about the statues coming down all around and which ones do and which ones don't.
Right.
So General Lee, bad. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, good. But now we're trying to keep score. So we have the statue of Italo Balbo, and we have a street named after him in Chicago. Italian aviator. He was Mussolini's guy. He was Mussolini's heir apparent.
Yeah, that one's coming down.
Yeah. So there was a letter to the editor of the Chicago Tribune today from somebody who's in the Italian Balbo Society. And they tell a much different version of his story.
The mayor seemed to be, he spoke like, we'll look at this in a few weeks or something. I just heard that as like, it's coming down.
That's the same way President Trump talks about people before they get fired.
Well, I don't know.
No, really, Scaramucci, well, we're going to see about that. We're going to look into that. Okay, so all of that coming up on WGN. Hi, it's 1:40 on WGN. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. So one other story then that we'll segue to, and that is the cost of, I got to just mention, Steve, that's $700 million. $700 million.
Do things with that.
In the, is that the Powerball or Mega Millions?
I mean,
Powerball.
It's not Morris money, but.
Yeah, I was glad to see the Tribune had that story, I think on page one again today, about the raffle in beautiful Morris, Illinois. That's the Grundy County seat,
Were you talking yesterday about it being held up, though?
Yeah, right.
Okay, I heard you say.
Yeah, that we were going to do it.
I didn't hear it.
Well, in fact, they had just got word when they were on with us from the VFW that how when churches and schools have raffles, they've got to get a special license?
Not everyone knows that.
So this thing's on hold right now. But they said all of the tickets will be honored. The money is still in the pool.
I got tickets,
And it will be paid out. You do not.
I do.
Oh, my gosh. Will you sell me a share of yours?
No, I will
not. Think about that. What did you pay for your tickets?
Well, actually, my parents have gone and picked up tickets for the family.
Here's what I'll do. I will cover 50% of the cost of your tickets.
I don't want to talk about this.
No, really.
It's not going to happen. But it's not going to happen. Two things. I'm not going to want to share because, if I win, because I'm sharing with my family already. And you don't pay on these things.
I do. I do. No. I will. I'll give you the money for. I will buy your ticket right now. That's money in your pocket. Now you're playing with house money. It's free. It's free. I will pay for your ticket. I'll give you the $5 or whatever it was you put in the raffle.
I'll call my mom and have her get you a ticket.
If it doesn't win, you're out nothing. If it does, you have to give me some of it. You don't even have to give me all of it or half of it.
Do you believe this stuff when you say it?
Everything I'm telling you is something I will do. I will absolutely honor this. I'll give you the money right now if you'll let me buy your ticket and then give me $10,000 of your winnings. There, for $5, all I'm asking for is for $10,000, but you would get the rest. And if you don't win, you're out nothing. This is a can't-lose proposition for you.
You'll give me $5 right now?
Well, not this instant. We're in different rooms.
Oh, so there it goes right away. Here we go.
The Powerball is at $700 million, and I am in on that. So we'll see how that goes. So much attention is being spent on the cost of the Secret Service detail for the president. President Obama had 31 people on his list that required round-the-clock protection. Boy, that is amazing. I mean, they're sleeping, they're in the office, they're at work at school, round-the-clock protection. President Obama had 31, President Trump has 42, in part because he's got 18 members of his family on the list, and I don't know which 18 there are, but it doesn't seem to be too excessive when you consider that the president has a family of six, right? Yeah. And then three of them are married. And I know Ivanka has two kids. So when you add it up, you're on your way to 18. I don't know who all's on the list. But my understanding is that Vice President Mike Pence is part of the president's detail of people that need coverage. You know, like it's 42. 42 is the number of people that need round-the-clock Secret Service protection. Well, that includes Mike Pence, his wife, and their three kids. I don't know if they have children, but I think Mike Pence should have that kind, too. So I don't know that these numbers are all that large. The Obamas were just a small family, and their kids weren't adults yet.
Well, isn't part of the story, though, and I agree with you, but part of it that he's traveling so much, and so they're having to do the travel budget is what's eating it up.
Sure, okay, so let's go there. Because I see this number thrown around, and it looks like, well, Trump's just, everything's larger with him. Well, it is, but that's not his fault. He is what he is. The number that's really getting bandied about is the $60,000 for golf cart rentals at his golf courses. So the Secret Service has to zoom around the golf course when he's playing golf, or when he's at Bedminster or Mar-a-Lago. $60,000 have been spent on golf carts. And by the way, that $60,000 is being given to Donald Trump. He owns the golf resorts.
Okay, that's a problem.
That is a problem. I don't know what the fix is, right? I mean, and you could help me on this. My number is 312-981-7200. What's the solution to this? And by the way, nothing needs to change is an option, right? I mean, the Secret Service is running out of money. Congress needs to approve more money. They will. That will happen, and then this story is going to go away. I know it bothers you if you don't like the president that we're lining his pockets. It's unseemly. It's inappropriate.
it's nuts, so John. Gross. It's crazy.
It is, but that's what you got. You got an unseemly, nutty president.
No, but if
you can't fix this.
If he were golfing at another golf course, and the other golf course, it would be out of money because they can't have a full line of people golfing. So I think then you'd pay for the course, for the carts. But if it's your own course, well,
if you're going to golf, golfing, you need Secret Service protection. That's going to happen no matter where it goes.
I know, but you don't
charge.
Those
golf carts are going to get rented.
You don't charge. No, they're not going to get rented. They're going to be, their services donated.
So the president, because he wants to golf, has to donate the cost of Secret Service golf cart rental?
I'm not saying he has to do anything. I'm saying if you were president and you were bringing everyone to your golf course and then charging the government whatever for golf carts.
Well, the only solution then is...
I think you'd say, we just plug them in at the end of the day. You can ride them. It's okay.
Yeah, really, that's an interesting point. But the only solution then is that the president doesn't golf because those golf cart rentals are a cost. It's a fixed cost. Somebody has to pay it.
No one has to
pay. It's not fair to ask the president to pay for the golf cart
rentals. He can do whatever he wants to do. I'm just saying, it seems to me like if you're in that position that you would just say that you wouldn't charge for the golf carts.
What was it when Barack Obama went golfing?
Wasn't it his course?
Okay, so that's a difference.
No, that's what I'm saying. That is the difference. I mean, if the president, Donald Trump, is golfing at Butler or somewhere,
sure,
you know, then you're doing it. But if he's golfing at, quote-unquote, his other home,
okay,
I think just in good form, he might say, yeah, you know what, I don't need the 60 grand. That's all. I'm not saying he should do it. I'm just saying I could. That would be one opportunity
for him to sort of just throw us a bone.
I mean, because if
just make it easy once for us. Okay, 312-981-7200. That's the number. You can call or text. It's your turn on WGN. We'll start with Dave. You're on WGN Radio. Thanks for calling, Dave. You're on the air.
Yeah, afternoon. I think the simple solution, maybe if he just stays in the White House and does his job instead of taking these mini vacations or traveling to his courses. You know, he's only supposed to be there 4 years and do his job instead of, you know, meandering around and, you know, getting his business name out there and getting paid for it.
Going to another rally, I think, tonight. He had a rally. Well, tonight's the Arizona rally, isn't it? Is tonight the Arizona rally, Steve?
Yeah, sure. Well, that's what a president does.
This is beside the point, but it's spectacular to me that within the first 6 months, actually within the first 60 days, he was holding campaign-style rallies. I get text messages from him all the time. I follow him. And, for instance, even as Charlottesville was going down in the aftermath, I was getting buzzed on my phone with donation requests to the president's reelection campaign. It's amazing. But we digress. Thank you for the phone call, Dave. Yeah, if he just did his job and stayed home more often or in the office more often, we wouldn't have this. Hey, Dave, you're on the air. What did you want to say?
Hey, John, you hit a nail on the head. First, and Steve will back it up on this. We're talking about the monies that are being spent. I believe it was in April, it was $92 million was asked for because they were running out of money back then, and they got it. So they've not only gone through the entire budget for the year, they went through that $92 million. You've got to take into consideration what you're talking about, golf carts. One, he's a businessman. Everything that goes through his property that's built out is paid for by the taxpayers. As the owner of that business, he gets between 38% to 40% of every tax dollar that's spent on his property. You got to take into consideration. He's playing down in Palm Springs. You've got the cost of the police departments down there for their interest and for their protection. You have the cost of the Coast Guard who are on the waters outside of his properties to make sure that nobody comes close to that. You have the cost of the Coast Guard on the Potomac River, which is adjacent to his golf course there. Every dollar that is spent by the people that come in to visit him at those properties, dignitaries, political ops, everybody that comes in there who bring their own security people in, they have to have rooms, they have to eat, they have to have services. All of that money that's billed to him properties that he owns.
Yeah, he's going to get it.
So
he's making millions of dollars, and yet he's giving up his pittance that he's making as president of the United States, and we don't even have proof that he has.
We haven't seen his taxes, so we don't know if he's doing that or not.
So back when I was doing sports, I used to work with some guys, you know, very famous athletes.
Thank you for the call, Dave. I appreciate you joining us.
And they print their name and get paid for it. You know, they would just go to a card show. They'd write their name on a piece of paper, and people would pay them for it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the president's in this situation. All he has to do is decide to go to one of his resorts that needs a little boost.
And then he plays for free, and we give him money for it.
Yeah.
By the way, we looked it up. So the total travel expenses, Judicial Watch estimated that Barack Obama's related travel expenses for 8 years totaled $97 million. And the Trumps are on their way to beat that this year. I don't know what the total is right now.
Well, I don't think President Obama traveled a lot. President Bush, the younger, I think he was out of town, you know, most weekends. So maybe Obama's not a good comparison.
Yeah. Well, I don't think any of it is. You know, I don't think you need to compare anybody to anybody. One guy has a big family. One guy has a little family. One guy likes to golf. One likes to go chop wood. You know, they get to do what they want to do. We have the money for this.
It is a little funky, though, if you're traveling and your business is making money because you go there.
And it also is funky because Trump routinely criticized. Don't make me play the clips of him saying, if I get elected, I won't be playing golf. Or Barack Obama, it cost so much for him to go to Hawaii. We all know he was routinely criticizing the Obamas for that for years. And now he is that and then some.
It's just funny, right? Because, well, a lot of charities have canceled at Mar-a-Lago. That's okay. Now there's more rooms. We'll go down there.
By the way, the number is 8 for those of you counting at home. At least it was as of yesterday. Groups, organizations, and charities that have canceled the Mar-a-Lago events, if that's any consolation to you. This is Elizabeth. You're on WGN. Elizabeth, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Hi. I pretty much agree with what everyone else has said, except that this does point out the fact that he does not do what he says he will do. He said he wouldn't take a salary. I think he is. He said he wouldn't go on vacation. He certainly is. I'm willing to give him 10 days. That's what I get at my job, is 10 days. And I make a heck of a lot less than he. Now, granted, he has more
responsibility.
If he was doing his job, he would. Yeah, but he's never there. He's always on vacation. I don't mind paying to protect his family. That's part of the deal. I object to paying for his golf.
Thank you for the phone call. Well put, Elizabeth. We'll go from you to line 5. Tom, you're on WGN. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was just trying to do the math on the carts. If it's $60,000, it's $50 a cart. That's 6,000 carts times 20. Let's say it's 20 Secret Service. That's 300 days. I don't know. I'm not defending it, but where's the 60,000? How does that end up? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's – it's not a fake figure, just so you know. Not a fake figure, but it doesn't add up.
It's funny because some people say every time he goes to Mar-a-Lago, it costs $3 million. A conservative group that's been monitoring this say it's $1 million. It's a lot, but we don't know exactly what it costs. They don't tell you exactly what it costs. You think that number sounds suspiciously high, though? Is that the point? All right, thanks for the call. It's 1:56. He dropped off, and we have to anyway. It's time for the news. Afterwards, are you afraid of elevators? There are some bizarre elevator stories in the news. Elif was telling me in the studio, she's, I don't know if claustrophobic is the right word, but is that what it is? Are you claustrophobic or are you a little phobic just about elevators per se?
I can be claustrophobic in general.
Well, then elevators aren't for you.
I don't like them.
So we're in the Tribune Tower. And we're all going to miss next year when we all have to exit here. We're going to move out to a new office, new building, new studios in a new building. This is going to be turned into condos. They will be awesome. But I think they should probably change out the elevators here.
I don't mind these ones because they're spacious enough.
Oh, they're spacious. But like I was in, sometimes the numbers don't match the floor. If you're an elevator, you pretty much have two things that you have to do. One is go up and down to the right floor. And the other thing is tell the person what floor that is. And I've been on 9 when it says 7. And it's not because the lights are burned out and it looks like the wrong number. One time I was in the elevator and literally I looked up.
And it said okay?
It said okay. And I'm like, what is that? Okay what? Okay nothing. That's not a number. That is not okay. So there's a couple of very strange stories about what's happened in elevators across the country and world. Now, you may not want to hear this.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Found one.
Here's John Williams.
Got a number for you. It's 206. John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Remember the number.
Lord have mercy.
For you to call is 312-981-7200. Text that number to 312-981-7200. Two other stories to get to as we close up our conversation, at least for today, about the travel expenses for the Trump family and other people around him who have round-the-clock Secret Service protection and how much it's costing the government. We need to now fund an additional $60 million to protect the president's family. If it's $60 billion, I've always said, then that's what we need to pay. We've got it. But some people are upset about where that money goes, too often to Trump's pockets, and I thoroughly understand that. But it's just such an impossible sort of calculation for you and I to relate to. So we were at least, like, suppose we do get the president to spot us the cost of the golf carts, it's still going to be really expensive. Anytime a first family travels anywhere, it's just insanely expensive. Now, the Obamas were somewhere between $97 and $110 million in travel expenses for 8 years. And it looks like the Trumps are going to be in that neighborhood after 1 year. I don't have the number where they are at currently. But this is, I think, helpful. Judicial Watch previously released documents showing travel expenses for President Obama. They use Freedom of Information Act. And so if you know what it costs for the first family then to travel, or the president and first lady, you then get a sense of what it would cost for the Trumps, you know, multiply it by more trips and more families, say. Judicial Watch closely watched Obama family travel costs throughout his presidency. Says here, Judicial Watch recently received documents from the Secret Service related to Michelle Obama's March 2014 trip to China. Don't know why she was there, but there she was. the total Secret Service expenses for her trip to China. And I'm looking for how long she was there. It doesn't say. But here's what it came to. For the Secret Service to guard her, they needed to stay in hotel rooms. The hotel rooms came to $288,000. Car rentals, $72,000. They had cell phone charges while they were over there, and those came to $5,020. By the way, my kid racked up that one summer in Canada, but that's another story. Rental reproduction equipment, I don't know what that means.
Copiers.
$4,282. Printers and toners, so there you go, $393 in toners, toner cartridges alone for her trip. Cell phone rentals while they were over there, foreign country, $1,010. Various supplies, $199.17. Overtime per diem for Secret Service, $11,266. Miscellaneous services by other government agencies came to $1,265. Air and rail cost $5,130 to sometimes shuttle them about while she was there. Add to that the prorated cost of Air Force One, which they do, and that was $362,000. And the total for Michelle Obama's trip to China cost $752,000. It was Michelle Obama's cost to go to China. So you can see how these numbers blow up pretty quick. $752,000, no mention of golf carts there.
Well, but that's likely, not to muddy it anymore, but that's probably a pretty official trip. That's part of it, too.
I suspect she was there with her husband.
Or
she wasn't
on,
shopping.
First ladies go on their own missions, too, or trips.
Yeah, right. She could have been. She was doing some sort of diplomatic work or charity work, something like that. What was it? The Treasury Secretary's wife was complaining. She was in a Twitter spat with an anonymous person.
Yeah, Instagram maybe. Or
Yeah, whatever the social media platform was, she was seen getting off of the, you know, government jet with her husband, the Treasury Secretary. And she's got bags. She was shopping. Oh, it was so much fun. And then somebody tweeted at her or posted, and they said, you know, I'm not sure that's so appropriate. And then, she, you know, don't go there. Don't go there. Don't read those. Don't go there. So now she's in a spat with some person talking, mocking this citizen. And it's just like nobody wins when you get into that. Nobody wins when you do that. So they brought down some more Confederate statues last night. And the longer this goes on, the more we're going to have to consider in Chicago what to do with the Balbo Road statue, anything else with Italo Balbo's name on it. This is the Wikipedia post. Italo Balbo was an Italian blackshirt, a leader who served as Italy's Marshal of the Air Force. He was the Governor General of Libya for Italy. He was the Commander-in-Chief of the Italian North African Mission and the heir apparent to Italian dictator Benito Mussolini. After serving in World War I, Balbo became the leading fascist organizer in his home region of Ferrari. He was one of four principal architects of the March on Rome that brought Mussolini and the fascists to power in 1922. In 1926, he began the task of building an Italian Royal Air Force and took a leading role in popularizing aviation in Italy and promoting Italian aviation to the world. In 1933, perhaps to relieve tensions surrounding him in Italy, he was given the government of Italian Libya job. He was given the government of Italian Libya, where he resided for the remainder of his life. Balbo was the only leading fascist to oppose both anti-Jewish racial laws and Mussolini's alliance with Nazi Germany. So that's a check on the other side. Early in World War II, he was killed by friendly fire when his plane was shot down over Tobruk by Italian anti-aircraft guns. They shot him out of the sky and he died early in World War II. So should we honor that guy with a street name and with a statue and a park in Chicago? We do.
The Italians, more than most ethnic groups, are pretty fierce about their statues and protecting them. So
they very much are.
It'd be a big fight.
I one time made a funny Italian comment here on this radio station and got us sued, and we paid. so tread lightly. This is from Dominic DeFrisco, the president emeritus of the Joint Civic Committee of Italian Americans, I presume here in Chicago. Doesn't say where they're from.
Yeah, he's a local guy. No, he is.
You know of him?
Yeah, sure.
So here's his letter to the editor today. It seems like Italo Balbo just became residual shrapnel from the barrage of bullets the rest of the country is firing over what to do with the approximate 1,500 Confederate place names and other symbols in public spaces. Italian Americans and others throughout Chicagoland are wondering why the memory of Balbo's remarkable accomplishments is being swept into the national wave of removing the past. 84 years ago, General Balbo's Air Armada landed at Chicago's World's Fair, marking the first mass flight of planes crossing the North Atlantic. The transatlantic crossing was rightly recognized as one of the most important and best executed aeronautical achievements of that time. The day of his arrival on the lakefront was the single most memorable and important day in the history of Chicago's Italian-American community. President Franklin Roosevelt honored him at the White House, and now Balbo's name is in question because of misinformation. We want to be perfectly clear. Balbo was an outspoken opponent of Benito Mussolini's tilt toward Hitler and was not the enemy many in the city of Chicago or the city council are portraying he was. Despite being a general under Mussolini, when Balbo saw where Mussolini was going with his pro-German policies, Balbo was horrified. He was one of the only fascists in Mussolini's regime to openly oppose Italy's anti-Jewish racial laws and Italy's alliance with Germany. Mussolini's disagreement with Balbo led to Mussolini exiling him to serve as the governor of Libya. Balbo was never an enemy of the United States. He was an inspiration to Italian Americans, and to those in aviation, Balbo did the right thing. He opposed Mussolini in his darkest time. Why should the city council bring Chicagoland Italian Americans into a dark corner where our community shines so brightly with all ethnic groups? Signed, Dominic DeFrisco, President Emeritus, Joint Civic Committee of Italian Americans here in Chicago. Okay, so now what do we do with that? So they're not going to go quietly on the whole Balbo thing. That's the one I hadn't thought about. Hadn't thought about this. Now you gotta arm yourself with some information, and then somebody's going to ask you to come on a side on this thing. And I don't know where to be on this one. It's all new to me. It's new to you. It's 2:16 now. Hey, Bob, this is John. You're on WGN. What's on your mind?
Hi, John. How are you today?
I'm good. What's on your mind, sir?
Okay. Well, General Balbo, yeah. He brought the Italian Air Fleet to Chicago and landed on Lake Michigan.
So I hear.
That's what it's there about. That's why it commemorated the Italian. There was a worldwide competition at the time, and it was commemorating the Italians landing in Chicago.
Yeah. Did they land? You said they landed in Lake Michigan. They landed in the water, or they landed on a runway?
These were
amphibious planes. They could land on the water.
Yes, amphibious planes, and they were flying around the world. And he led a squadron of four planes to land in Chicago.
Wow.
And so that's where that all comes from.
Yeah. So what are we going to do? Are we going to leave just sort of see the good and the bad and leave it as it is?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because it commemorates a feat of landing in Chicago coming from Italy. So it had nothing to do with the war or anything like that. And it's the same as the monument in Oakwood Cemetery where the Confederate soldiers are buried. There's 4,000 Confederate soldiers buried at Oakwood Cemetery.
Yeah, I understand that, but I don't know if you want to equate those two, because I don't think
in the defense of Balbo,
they're the same.
Right. It's commemorating an event which was a feat in flying.
In aviation, yeah, no, I get your point. Hey, it's a good history, if nothing else. I appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us.
Okay.
Yeah, have a good day, but that's different than the Civil War stuff. That's different than the Confederate stuff. You saw what they did at the University of Texas in Austin last night. They took four statues down. You know why? Because the students get there next week. Oh, they're clever that way. There was 30 people there when it was going down. Some were for it, some were against it. Problem solved. At least for now, they're going to go to a museum there on campus or a historical society. They're not going to melt them down, but they're getting them out of the way. Four statues at the University of Texas Austin overnight. Students get there next week. Boy, were they clever. Reminded me a little bit of what happened to Meg's Field. Stuart, this is John. What do you want to say? You're on the air.
Yes, I think we're really missing the bigger picture here. When we start looking at individuals and what they did and they didn't do as icons of the United States currently, or the situation with the Italian leader, we need to understand what is it that we're doing. And we're doing exactly what Marxism and Stalinism is all about. You start taking down icons that were recognized in the country. You're not debating whether or not Robert E. Lee statue should come down for what he did, or Balboa for what he did or didn't do. You're looking at erasing history. Now, there are sinister people who are behind this, believe me. These aren't your average whatevers. They're being riled up. And Austin, Texas, taking that thing down is probably, given the current set of circumstances, a stroke of genius right now. But that, and we're glorifying these people who are tearing these statues down and kicking them and spitting on them and all the rest of it. They should be arrested and prosecuted. Arrested and prosecuted.
For what?
We need to, they're destroying public property.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, if the city's doing it, I guess it's okay.
Why should we tolerate it? See, it's that attitude that for what? Let them do what they want.
No. But if a city brings it down, if it's the city statue and the city decides to tear it down, that's different. Yeah. But no, if it's vandals, if it's vigilantes, right, then we've got a different thing entirely. Boy, when that one statue came down last week, if we're all talking about the same video, you're right. You saw people run up and spit on it, and one guy runs up and kicks it as hard as he can. I thought, I'll bet that hurt, because the statue really doesn't care.
I hope he broke his foot.
I think he did. Stuart, thank you for the phone call. It's 2:21, and you're listening to WGN Radio. We'll take a couple more calls and texts in just a couple more minutes, and then we'll move on to the strangest couple of elevator stories. You may or may not want to hear this. You know, at the end of the day, you need to hear this. We'll get to it in a sec. Let's talk to who's next in line here. I think Tom is. Hey, Tom, this is John. You're on the air. What do you want to say?
Hi, gentlemen. I don't think that this is the erasing of history. I really enjoy the discussion and the conversation of it. You mentioned something I didn't know, that Balbo was the governor of Libya. So, you know, let's talk about not only fascism, but fascism that engaged in colonialism and engaged in subjugation of people in different continents. I mean, you can have this conversation all day, and really it's an eye-opener to us, you know. So I think we can learn a lot. I think we're ignorant of history, and we need to do a lot of work.
A little bit of that. By the way, so that doesn't help Mussolini's Balbo's case in Chicago then, does it? I mean, I'm going to put you in charge of statues when I get to be king. Does the Balbo statue stay in Chicago?
Is it? It's in a blisk, right?
Say it again?
I'm trying to remember. It's in a blisk.
Yeah,
is it a statue of him, or is it an obelisk?
I'm not sure. Whatever it is, there's something there with his name on it. What are you going to do with it?
I thought it was an obelisk. I'd leave it there, and let's continue the conversation.
Tom, thanks for listening. That's what we're doing on WGN. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Let's go to Robert. I don't think this is Robert E. Lee. This is somebody named Robert. Here. Robert, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hey.
I just wanted to mention about the statue in I guess that would be West Englewood, bordering Marquette Park of Lincoln at 69th and Walcott. That was tarred, covered with blue tarps. I think the article was on DNA Info, and it was lit on fire, I guess, to make the concrete crack, because it was a concrete bust of Lincoln. He's still there, but he's black now.
Hold on a second, because I saw a picture in the last few days of a statue that was tarred and feathered.
That was Lincoln's statue.
No, that was Jefferson Davis.
But that wasn't here in Chicago. This happened in the Englewood neighborhood to a Lincoln statue?
Yes, sir. It's in DNAinfo.com. If you go to the Inglewood section, you will see it. It's plain as day.
When did that happen? I'm sorry. I'm hearing maybe everybody else on staff knows. Last couple of days. I'm shocked to hear that. I did not know that. Now, what's the purpose of that?
You know, some people, like in the South, you know, their narrative of the Civil War is different from the narrative in the North. I was when I was in
But Lincoln freed the slaves. If you want to follow the story that way,
I get that. Yes, and I mean, I love him, but there are people in the South that are still fighting the Civil War, and down there, you don't find many statues of Lincoln anywhere. And this one here, being vandalized in Chicago, tells me that that element is here.
Sounds like tit for tat, right? So if you're going to take down our Civil War statue, then we're going to go get your Lincoln.
Exactly.
Boy, that advances the conversation, doesn't it? My gosh.
Not at all.
Man. Thanks for the heads up. I'm going to look into that. I appreciate you telling me.
Yes, sir. Have a great day, WGN.
Yeah, thank you, Robert. Appreciate you dialing us up. Tom, you're on WGN. How are you?
Good. How are you? Good afternoon.
Hey.
Real quick, maybe a simple solution. This way we're not erasing history, as some say. Put these various statues in various museums. This way they're not out on in front of said public buildings and making people, you know, getting them riled up, whatever. And that may be a compromise.
Yeah. We definitely need one, Tom. I appreciate the call. We're going to go from you to, is it Dominic? You're on WGN. Hi.
Hello.
Hey, this is John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. Hi.
This is Dominic DeFrisco. It's calling from New York City. I heard you were talking about the Balbo controversy.
I just read your letter on the air.
Yes. Oh, you did. Well, thank you.
Well done.
I don't know what your feelings are, but if you have a few moments, I could give you an accurate historical synopsis of what this issue is all about.
Dominic, actually, I've done that. I mean, I read your letter, I've read more than you know, because I know you're in New York, so you say, and you haven't been able to listen to the show.
I'm here in New York visiting, but I live in Chicago.
I understand. Right. So you, just so you know, we've been having a conversation about it and how Balbo would be similar or different from these other statues. I thought you made your case pretty well in the paper today.
Yes, And I'd like you to know how surprised and shocked we are that Alderman Burke's taken up this cause when he's such a great and knowledgeable historian. The fact of the matter is that Italo Balbo was anti-Nazi. When Mussolini passed the anti-Semitic laws, he took his Jewish friends to dinner in public. He defied the anti-Semitic laws, and he befriended all his Jewish friends, remained loyal and faithful to him. And there are Jewish people here in Chicago who are survivors of the Holocaust who can attest to Balbo's constant criticism of the Nazi regime and of the anti-Semitic horror that they visited on the Jewish people.
Dominic, what are you hearing then about what's going to happen? I mean, you mentioned the alderman.
Well, you know what? I wish if I were younger, I would chain myself to the sign, but I can't do that anymore. What we're doing about it is the issue among the Italian people. You have to understand that in 1933, Italy was a close friend of America. Balbo was honored by President Roosevelt, who gave him a distinguished flying cross. He was honored all over the world as a great aviator and a member of the human race who believed in equality, believed in the dignity of man. The word fascist is often used to describe people as consummately evil. You must understand that the word fascism was born from an Italian phrase, which Mussolini invented, sadly, but it simply means the following. Fasci, F-A-S-C-I, is a bundle of sticks tied together. And was Mussolini's goal to get the bundle of sticks signifying the disparate parts of Italy into one nation. The word fascism fell into disrepute during the Spanish Civil War when the communist government of Spain, called the Republic of Spain, was fighting with Franco and with Mussolini and Hitler over the ruling of Spain. And the communist press all over the world berated the effort to unseat the Republic by calling them fascists
and using that term to denote the lowest type of human being.
Somebody said a moment ago, boy, you're learning a lot listening to the radio today. Dominic, I'm out of time, but I need you to give me a short answer to this question then. What are you hearing about what the city's going to do?
Besides the media campaign, we're going to call on other aldermen to vote against this when and if it comes up. We're asking for a hearing in city council. We're asking for an editorial board meeting with the Tribune and the Sun-Times. And we're asking not only the Italian-American community, but people of Chicago who have known that name over the years and never had a problem with it, to come to the support of right-thinking, historically accurate people.
Good luck to you, Dominic. Thank you for taking some time out. You're in New York. You heard we were talking about you on the radio. I appreciate your call.
My good friend Linda Belpedia, I heard all about it. Thank you.
Bye now. We took a call from one of our listeners moments ago who said in the Inglewood neighborhood there's a bust of Abraham Lincoln, and it has been vandalized. It was tarred and feathered and set on fire. DNA Info's Andrea Watson wrote, the 3-foot bust of Abraham Lincoln in Inglewood has been vandalized twice in 1 week. It was found with dark burn marks and crumbling pieces of concrete around the face on Wednesday. 15th Ward Alderman Raymond Lopez said that was the second attempt to torch it. Saturday morning. It's 69th and Walcott. I don't know what's going on out there. I'm sorry to hear that. Margaret, this is John. You're on the air. What did you want to say?
Yes, John. In fact, that was my brother that was talking to the Lopez on Saturday. My name is Margaret McGrath, and I lived on 70th and Walcott.
Yeah.
I am 88 years old right now, and that statue was put there, I think, around the 1920s sometime. My father and other members of the neighborhood, Mr. Doherty. And the reason the statue was there, because that used to be Lincoln Street. My birth certificate says Lincoln Street, and it was changed to Walcott. I don't remember what year. So,
this has been a fixture of the community for nearly 100 years. That's the one. What a shame.
Another thing, the statue at that time, during the war, I had a brother that was killed in service. And at that time, they were a flagpole put up, and like his name and another boy that was killed in service. So it was like a memorial. In fact, there was a memorial there.
Why did they put a Lincoln statue or a bust there?
Again, because that used to be Lincoln Street.
Lincoln Street, yeah, and I guess they just were going to honor him.
And when they found the story I had, again, this is from my father years ago, 1920 or whatever, the statue was found in a dumpster someplace, and men picked it up and painted it and all that throughout.
Oh, I see. So they rehabbed it and put it up there, huh?
Yeah, rehabbed it and put it up there.
How about that? Well, that's no good. Margaret, thanks for the call. I know that the alderman has a GoFundMe page, or is planning on establishing a GoFundMe page to get that thing back up there. And I think that's a pretty easy donation to make if they do that. I don't know the status of that. Okay, thanks for the phone call. There was a story in the news today, woman killed in gruesome elevator accident after giving birth at hospital in Spain. There's a story out of Denver about an elderly man who was found dead in his elevator and may have been there for a month. He got into an elevator in Denver. They were doing work on the parking garage in the apartment complex that he lived in. Not that many people were using that elevator, and I guess it was supposed to not be used now because they're doing work there. This guy mistakenly goes into the elevator, and son of a gun, the door opens up and closes, and it never opened up again. He hit the emergency button a couple of times. The people on the emergency button then tell the building management, hey, we've got a ring for an emergency in one of the elevators. I never knew how these work. I've never hit that button before. The management of the apartment complex then looks at the other functional elevators and says, well, there's nobody here. It must be okay. The guy does it twice and passed away. They only noticed it because of the smell, which was coming after a month of decomposing in the unused elevator.
What a horror film.
Oh, my gosh. No, it gets worse. In Spain this week, a woman gave birth to a child. They then took her out in a gurney, and they were going to transfer her to another floor in the hospital after the birth of the baby, maybe a recovery room or something. They put her in the elevator, and then the door closes, but you know how sometimes it doesn't work? I mean, I don't know. This is what happened. It doesn't work. So the guy opens somehow the elevator door, hits a button, the elevator door goes open, and he's pulling her back out. And just as he's wheeling her out in the gurney, the elevator starts going up really fast. It pins her in between the floors, and she died there, dangling. It took them 10 hours to remove her body. It says several hours. I don't know why I said 10. Police and firefighters worked for several hours to remove her body from the elevator. So Elif and I were just talking about this, and I'm a little leery of the elevators here in the Tribune Tower.
Oh, I've been stuck in an elevator in this building.
I have not. I've never been stuck in an elevator before, and I don't know what happens when you push that button. We have a lift in my apartment complex in the condo that Brenda and I live in, and I'm not 100% sure of it all of the time. But when you hit that button, is there somebody that's listening on the other end?
Yeah, I hit the button, and then I had someone answer, and they said, haven't you moved yet? No. But they said they would send someone.
Yeah.
And then,
do they?
I'm trying to remember. Then it dropped quickly of like 10 or 15 feet or something, and then it eventually opened.
I'm sure that elevators are super safe, and that by and large, nothing's going to happen. For instance, when's the last time you heard of an elevator that went, vroom, you know, the cable snapped or messed up and went way fast down or fast up? That never happened.
You just told me a story.
I know,
one.
But I mean, really, that's the real man bites dog story.
Right.
It, as nervous as we are about these things, that never happens, right?
Well, right. What about the Tower of Terror movie? That's what that reminds me of. I mean, I know it's a Disney movie.
I thought it was a movie. It didn't happen in real life.
Right? I know.
It's not based on a real thing.
But I still fear that that's going to happen. Something like that could happen.
You were caught in an elevator. No, you were in the subway. Was it the L?
Yeah, it was the Blue Line. And it was late at night, too.
Was it underground?
It was underground. And we were stuck for probably 15, 20 minutes. And
that's not good.
Nobody else seemed worried, but I was alone. So I was nervous. And you don't know when you're going to get out of there, when you're just enclosed in this dark space that if it's broken, it's broken. How is someone even going to come in there and save you?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I can't even think about this.
What was the worst part?
Would you leave her alone, Steve? I don't know if you've been in a situation like this. 312-981-7200. My guess is if you're claustrophobic, then all bets are off. Then it's just a bad day. Then it's a terrible thing. You can't fix that. But if you're not, it's probably just, at the end of the day, it's just annoying. Didn't Dr. Ben Carson got stuck in an elevator recently? He seemed to have the worst luck. Ben Carson was stuck in an elevator when he was visiting some community center or something. Ro and Anna will be in the studio in just a couple minutes to get their show rolling. Let's take a couple of your phone calls. So if you thought being stuck in an elevator was bad, two people perished in the last week in different parts of the world because of freak accidents. But what about Tony's story? Tony, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. Yeah, I was at Great America. We were on the American Eagle about 10 years ago. And I'm deathly afraid of heights, but the girl I was with asked me to go on it. So I wanted to man up and say, yeah, we'll go on it. We get to the very top before they release you at the hump to go down, and the thing stopped. We were up there for at least 15 minutes, and on a very windy day, you can feel that thing swaying back and forth, 2 to 3 feet off, you know, off center. A guy comes on the speaker and goes, we know you're up there. Hold on. Everything's being worked on. Then about 5 minutes after that, he said, we might have to ask you all to walk down. We're still working on it. Now, I am not walking down from this thing, no matter what. But they finally got it going. We went on the roller coaster again.
So you were able to ride it down, or did you have to walk down?
We rode it down. They got it.
Yeah, wow. Tony, you're now cutting out, but wow. Okay, Tony's winning. If you're keeping score at home, Tony's winning. Thank you for the call, sir. Let's go from Tony to Rob. Rob, this is John. You're on the air.
Hey, John. How you doing today?
Good, man. Good.
We were jumping up down the elevator one time. We got stuck. We were, back in 94, 95. We got stuck. We had to climb out of it after I popped the hatch, my buddy and his girlfriend. And so we got out there and had to call. They pried the door open for us. We climbed out. But, I got one question for you. I grew up in Evanston down the street from these Polish people, and they had numbers on their arms. And would you expect these Polish people to chop their arms off and throw them in the garbage? And the other thing is I'd like to say, I think we need to classify this Antifa group as being terrorists because they're not out here trying to, be their free speech. You're trying to shut people down from free speech. And this stuff is getting carried away, and it's ridiculous.
Back to the statues conversation. Yeah, you got a lot for me to unpack there. I'm not going to take the time with it right now, but I appreciate your call.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye, Rob. This is Phil. You're on WGN. Phil, what did you want to say? Hi.
Hi, John. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you, sir.
I was at my son's college dormitory at Eastern Illinois, and he was moving out. Spring, I don't remember what year, but anyway, we needed more boxes, so I said, well, I'll go down and get them. I got in the elevator, I got all the way to the bottom floor. The door wouldn't open, and this is before cell phones, and so I just started pounding on the door. Finally, a girl from the desk working at the dorm came over, and she said, what's wrong? And I said, could you open the door? And she said, I can't open the door. You have to, sir. I said, excuse me, but it won't open. And she said, well, all right, I'll call the elevator, our elevator guy. I said, fine. Before you do that, do you simply have a crowbar or something? And she said, what's that? So I sat down, and half hour later, the man from Mattoon, Illinois, if you're familiar with Eastern Illinois, that's about 25 minutes away.
Yeah.
He showed up. He said, well, are you okay? And I said, I'm fine. Just open the door, please. And he opened the door with a crowbar.
Well, at least you got out. I thought, if this was my story, he would say, okay, now see that button that says open door? Hit that. I mean, that would be my mistake.
You have to remember that this is the spring semester. It's over. The elevator is beat up. Half the buttons didn't work.
Yeah, right.
Half of them didn't light up, and so then before they got me out, my son finally figured where I was. He and some friends come down, and he gives me the ultimate compliment. Knowing his father, he says, come on, Dad, quit fooling around.
Yeah, right. He's such a joker, my dad. He sat in the elevator for an hour.
Yeah.
I'm glad you made it. Yeah, those dorm elevators, I'm getting lots of calls, and a lot of you right now are dealing with them and knowing that they don't look as good as maybe you wish they would. Thanks for the call, man. I appreciate you joining us. It's 2:55 on WGN. This may be a conversation we're going to have to renew on our Saturday show because we're getting all sorts of harrowing experience stories. So maybe we'll tell more of these on Saturday. By the way, do you have the Bonnie Tyler Total Eclipse of the Heart controversy audio? Can we just play a little bit of this?
Sure thing.
I just have, okay, so because Bill and Wendy, God bless them. They played, let's do the clip from CNN. Bonnie Tyler, total eclipse coming up. So let's put her on a boat, get on the boat with her. And then when the total eclipse comes over, she'll sing on a cruise ship, Total Eclipse of the Heart. They asked her to preview it on CNN, and she did.
I need you more than ever. And if you only hold me tight, we'll be holding on forever.
So she's not all the singer she used to be. Let's play the original one. If you remember Bonnie Tyler, when she had a hit in 1980-something or another, it sounded a little bit like this. You see, she's always had a raspier, kind of scratchy voice. Okay, so kill that one. So we have her previewing it and her back in the day. But when she actually sang it on the boat, and this is the question for Bill and Wendy earlier today, do you jump off the boat or not? This is what it sounded like.
Nothing I can do, total eclipse of the heart.
See, it was never a great song to begin with.
Once upon a time, there was light in my life. Now there's only love in the dark. Nothing I can say, I'm total eclipse.
See, people were applauding and singing along with her. The last time I made a sound like that, I was on my knees in the bathroom, and it wasn't going well for me. It's not a pleasant sound. That's Bonnie Tyler singing. Okay, 1 to 100. Let's score it. Sports, go. Kevin, what do you give her singing?
I go negative 50.
Violetta Podramatic says,
I kind of like it because it's funny.
She's trying so hard. That's the thing that's lost.
Appreciate
in this.
The effort, for Lesser, sure.
I know. Give her props for trying.
I'm going to give her 25.
I think the real fools in this are the people that paid money to get on a vote. Who thought that was going to be a good idea anyway with Bonnie Tyler?
I mean, isn't she like 85?
She's 100. No, she's not, but her voice is. Rokon, Anna DeVlantis, I got to you late. I'll get out of your way. You guys do a really fine radio show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We will actually have the former captain of the USS Cole joining us to talk about what's happening with the Navy and why they keep hitting other ships.
Oh, my gosh.
Other ships are
hitting
them.
It's four if you include
four
some smaller incidents and then the two big ones. This is terrible.
Yeah, bad situation.
All right.
So that's all coming your way, too. And Brett Baer joins us as well. So stay right here.